from the great Atlantic Ocean to wide Pacific shore, to the queen of the flowing mountain south of Baltimore. She's mighty tall and handsome, yet known quite well by all. She made a modern combination on that Wabash cannonball. She come down to Birmingham on a cold December day. When she rolled into the shed, you could hear all the people say, yeah, the gal from Tennessee, she's long and she's tall. She's here from Indiana on that Wabash cannonball. Can't you hear the jingle roll, the rumble and the roar, gliding through the woodland, through the hills and by the shore? The mighty rushing of the engine, lonesome hobo squall, traveling through the jungle on that Wabash cannonball. Yes, old Daddy Claxton may his name forever stand. He'd long to be remembered, call his known out through the land. But his earthly race is over, the curtain around him falls, taking him through to Dixie on that Wabash cannonball. Can't you hear the jingle roll, the rumble and the roar, gliding through the woodland, through the hills and by the shore? Mighty rushing on the engine, lonesome hobo squall, traveling through the jungles, boys, on the Wabash cannonball.
You know what that means? Means Christmas is over.
Indeed.
That's the end of all that bullshit Christmas music on this show. Oh, well. It's fun while it lasted. There will be another Christmas next year, everybody. Don't worry.
A mere 11 months away.
Don't know if there's going to be a Christmas in 2012, but we can hope. All right, everybody. It's Brian Vinny's show. Got a lot to talk about today, as we always do. We've got, actually, we got nothing to talk about,
we got
really.
Raw, and we got some old WWE classics.
Raw and World Class Championship Wrestling. I talk about that today. And no SmackDown, since SmackDown was on last Tuesday, so we've already recapped that. For those of you listening that are freeloaders, boy, did you miss out on a Christmas show this year. A lot of people seem to enjoy that show.
I'd like to tell you all about it, but I don't remember.
You know, I have come to the conclusion, apparently every year I threaten not to, put the Christmas show up.
That is true.
I didn't know that. Apparently, I was drunk all those times I threatened not to put it up, because I have no memory of this.
Could be.
But apparently, every year I feel the show is awful, I threaten to not put it up, people ask me to please put it up, I put it up, and then they're all happy. So, I have concluded that the show brings such joy to so many people that we're going to have to do it every year, Vince.
I should read the text you sent me about this.
It's only once a year we have to do this. You've got 364 days to recover.
I need them.
I'm sure you'll be fine by next December. Just don't drink until then. You'll be begging for alcohol.
That is entirely possible, actually. Here's the exact text message you sent me on the subject. We have to do this fucking show every year, at least in some form. Brings, quite frankly, a retarded amount of joy to a shitload of people.
Mm-hmm.
That text made me giggle.
Well, that's the conclusion that I came to after getting emails and messages on my Facebook and on Twitter and on the board.
People do seem happy with it.
They seem to love the show every year, so I guess, as Dutch Mantel said today on the program, an old lesson he learned back when wrestling was great, you can never disappoint your fans.
Mm.
That's what he said. Never disappoint the people.
That makes sense.
So I don't want to disappoint people, so we're probably going to do a Christmas show next year, everybody. I don't know what form it will take. I don't know what we're going to do. It's not like we ever have a plan going in. The plan is show up at 4, we'll get liquor, we'll record a show.
I will tell you right now, my plan next year will be to not spend the night on your couch.
Told a lot of people that we were going to call, and I called approximately 25% of them. So again, if you're one of the people that I had said we were going to call, or even if I didn't tell you I was going to call, I wanted to call many of the people on the phone list. And as usual, the folks low on the list, as far as alphabetically, didn't get called. Maybe we'll have to go backwards next year, starting with the Z's.
That's actually not a terrible idea.
I'll call Dolph Ziggler first, for example. Anyway, I wanted to tell a cat story here, since we don't have a lot of other stuff to talk about. And this story is astounding. It starts out as a terrible story, but ends up all right in the end. So, the kittens are getting bigger, which is the sad part of the story. One of them, Gracie's, continues to expand, and Snorky's just turning into a cat. No longer kittens anymore. It's been about five, almost 6 months old now. It's very sad. But regardless, they're still cute. And they're still kittens in the sense that they run around and they act like idiots. Now, as some of you will recall, we'd had a problem with the cats getting up on the counters and doing things they're not supposed to do. And, of course, when I first got the cats and I started telling these stories and people started emailing me and posting on my Facebook and posting on the board that, Brian, one of these days, you're just going to realize that the cats are in charge. Remember this?
You will learn what it's like to be owned by a cat.
The cats, you will someday learn it's their house, you're just living in it. I heard that from a lot of people. And, of course, I thought, bullshit. Ain't no way some cat is going to run the show around here. This is my house. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the cats act like idiots. They keep getting on the counters. They keep getting on the table. And of course, a couple of weeks ago, a little over a week ago, they had their worst day ever. If you recall, they pissed on my fleece, which people interpreted as pissed on my face. And quite frankly, they may as well have pissed on my face. I think what happened, well, I'm not going to tell the story about what happened, but regardless, the cat pissed on my fleece. So it was a terrible day for them, and it was such a bad day that my wife actually was thinking, you know, what are we going to do about these cats? Because I really don't want to get rid of them, but are we going to have to get rid of these cats? Are they that crazy? This was like the peak of their insanity. So I was determined to teach these cats not to go on the tables and the counters. It's unsanitary, these fucking cats getting on the table and the counters. So you read all sorts of things, you know, get a spray bottle, make a loud noise. You know, I read about this idea of you take a can and you fill it with coins, and every time you see the cats on the counter, you shake the can repeatedly and it scares the shit out of them and they get down.
Sure.
Well, this wasn't working because, as noted, I would go upstairs when nobody was home and it would get very quiet downstairs. And so I would sneak down the stairs, and if I was too loud, I would hear, which was the sound of the two cats getting off the counters, because they heard I was coming.
Right.
Or maybe I'd sneak down the stairs, and I was quiet enough to catch them off guard. They are, in fact, indoor cats, so they die within a day outdoors. Their hunting and tracking skills and just not the best. So I would sneak up on them and surprise them, and they'd be on the counters, and then they, of course, flee. So I came to this conclusion that they never seem to get on the bookcases, and they never seem to get on the dining room table. They only get on the kitchen table and the kitchen counters. And so I concluded that there must be something up there that smells good. Perhaps when we prepare food, or perhaps when we eat, even if we clean the table, perhaps there's these lingering scents that cause particularly the fat one to get up there looking for food. So this was the conclusion I drew, because they had learned not to get on anything else that they weren't supposed to get on. So I, like a crazy man, I clean these counters and this table like you've never seen. And I cleaned it and I scrubbed it, and it was like the sort of kitchen counter you'd see in a hospital. There was nothing living on it. And I concluded that problem solved. Because I figured the day that they were at their worst was the day after the Christmas show, when there was like a bunch of fucking gingerbread houses and muffin crumbs and shit like that on the counters. So I presume that the cat was just trying to get at all this food. So if I just completely cleaned it off, because we'd have no problems.
Cats do love gingerbread.
They do. Well, the fat one is always going for cookies and shit like that. Even though she can't eat that stuff, apparently she just knows that that's what fat things eat. So anyway, I cleaned it off, I sanitized it, and then I went upstairs. And about 15 minutes later, it was very quiet down there, and I thought, sneak down and see what these buggers are up to. So I very, very quietly, it took seriously like 10 minutes. I was so determined to not get caught that I snuck down the stairs very, very slowly. And I round the corner, and the fucking cats are on the counters. And they saw me and they freaked out and they ran away. And I was just like, I don't know what to do anymore. So I got on the internet and I Googled, keep fucking cats off counters. And everybody has all these wacky ideas about how to keep cats off counters. And the gist of it is that, yes, you can spray the fucking cats. You can make a loud noise. You can perhaps throw a box of a former microwave dinner. You can pound it down on the floor and try and scare the shit out of them. But all you do, you see, cats are not stupid. I know that cat haters think that they're stupid, but they're really not. All you're doing is training the cat to not get on the counters when you're around. So the idea that if you scare them, they're not going to go up there when you're not around, don't be a fucking moron. It's just not going to work. The only way to keep the cats off the counters, I read, is that you have to teach them that going on the counters is bad, and not because you as a human irrationally freak out every time they get up there. So the ideas were, you've got to put like sticky tape all over your fucking counters, or you've got to line your counters with tinfoil because they hate the feeling of it. Or they even have, I swear to God, motion sensors hooked up to electrical shocks. Swear to God. Or a motion sensor hooked up to something that sprays the fucking cat. So basically you teach the cat that getting on the counters is bad and it has nothing to do with you. Because you don't want your cat to just fear you, because then it'll stay off the counters only when you're around. So the idea of putting fucking sticky tape all over my counters and constantly lining the counters with tinfoil and all of this other stuff, I finally decided, you know what? Who gives a fuck? Just let the fucking cats get on the counters and wipe everything down before you cook and wipe everything down before you eat.
And now they own you.
They own me. I finally, after however many months it's been, I finally realized that everybody was right. And part of me was like, okay, so my original idea was to sanitize the fucking counters every fucking day so they wouldn't go up there. What's the difference between just sanitizing them before you eat there? You know what I mean? And the moral of the story is, ever since I stopped freaking out about the cats getting on the fucking counters, now they almost never get up there. So apparently, I got so angry at them getting on the counters that they realized that's the place to be. Every time we get up there, this fucking human loses his mind. Something good must be up there. So now that I've just said I don't give a fuck, they don't get up there. And when they see me, they just calmly get off. So anyway, yes, I have given up. The cats now run the house. That is not my story, though. So the cats are running around like idiots yesterday. Whitney's not here. She's at Cannon Beach. So I'm here all by myself, and I'm watching Raw. And the cats, on their current schedule, act like complete idiots from about 10 to 1 a.m. About 1 a.m., they're hungry and they're ready for bed. But about 10 p.m., they start acting like idiots. And they run, and they get in bags, and they've got a new thing where they attempt to dig underneath the couch cushions to get something that's not there. Why? I have no idea. But they're constantly burrowing. They burrow, they run around, they fight each other. They have a deal where they're both on opposite ends of the living room, and they charge at each other like two rams, and when they're about to run headfirst into each other, they both stop and leap straight up in the air with their arms and legs splayed out to the side, and they freak each other out.
Their arms, you say?
Their arms and legs. They run up the fucking stairs, they run into their little room where their litter box and their food is. They fucking pound on the thing that their food is in, and it makes a loud noise, and it freaks them out, and then they run all the way down the fucking stairs. Anyway, they're doing this last night, and I'm trying to ignore them. And I'm watching Raw, and I shouldn't even laugh at this, but the fact that everything's okay, it's kind of funny now in hindsight. So I'm typing the Raw report, and all of a sudden, I swear to God, out of the corner of my eye, a fucking cat falls from heaven. A cat falls from heaven and lands on the ground. And I'm like, holy shit! And I look over, and there's Snorky, the little one, just sitting on the ground. Now, keep in mind, they had not stopped moving for a good 45 minutes. I don't know what they were doing, but at the top of the stairs, which is how high, how far up is it, Vinny? In pro wrestling terms, 200 feet.
Yeah.
In real life, it's about, what would you say?
12 to 15.
12 to 15 feet.
Yeah.
Apparently, they were fucking around at the very top of the stairs because cats like to be up high. It's one of the reasons they get on fucking counters because cats are like tree-dwelling creatures or something.
Yes.
And they love a high three-dimensional space. So their high three-dimensional space this evening was the top of the fucking stairs. And I don't know if they were grappling up there. I don't know if one of them decided she was going to walk the ledge. I don't know what happened, but she fucking fell 15 feet. And I guess she landed on her feet, but she lands, thump, and then she just sits there and she looks over at me and she doesn't move. And I'm like, oh my God, the cat's fucking dead. And I run over there and I pick her up and she just looks at me. Now, I realize anthropomorphism, you know how it is? You assume this cat is looking at you saying, holy shit, what the fuck just happened right here? When in reality, the cat's thinking something totally different, like, when's it time to eat? No, this cat was thinking, what did I just do? And what can I do to never have that happen again? And she sat there very calmly, and I touched both of her arms and legs, and she wasn't crying or anything like that. And I checked her ribs, and I checked her neck and her head, and she just sat there looking at me, very calm. And the other cat's upstairs, and I look up, and she's just looking over the edge, like, holy shit, what just happened? And I'm like, Gracie, come down here, get off the ledge. And she gives a little weird meow, and she runs down the stairs, and she comes around the corner. And, of course, as soon as she comes around the corner, then Snorky freaks out because there's playing to be done again. So she starts squirming and this and that, and I put her on the ground, and she assumes a position. And, of course, they both charge at each other and leap high in the air, and their arms and legs go out to the side, and then they're running around the house like fucking idiots again. And she started purring later. She ate. Apparently, she's totally fine, but this cat falling from the fucking top of the stairs out of the corner of my eye and crashing on the ground, I will never forget this as long as I live. This was a great trauma for me. I presume it was a great trauma for the cat, although the cat no-sold it. And scared the shit out of me. I thought she was dead. But, I don't know. Seven lives left at this point?
Yeah, it's possible too.
Because there was that time that they zoomed out of the bedroom and didn't know stairs were there. And did the Wile E. Coyote running in midair before plunging straight down to the second floor. But this one fell from the top all the way down to the hardwood. And apparently landed on its feet and was fine. But that is why they say cats have nine lives. So, scared the bejesus out of me. I waited 2 days to tell Whitney because
you just wanted to make sure?
I wanted to make sure the cat was all right before I broke the news to her. So,
how did she take it?
I don't really know, because she's been sick.
Hmm.
But when she learned the cat was okay, she was just like, I always get so nervous when they're playing around up there. And I never thought nothing of it, because I thought, there's no way these fucking cats are going to fall off the top of these stairs all the way down to the hardwood. Well, one did yesterday, and I don't know. I giggle a little bit, because in hindsight, the vision out of the corner of my eye of a fucking cat falling from God knows where and landing on the hardwood and being totally fine and just looking at me with a little bit of mild concern, it's funny in hindsight. But if she'd been hurt, there'd be no show today, everybody. I don't know what I would have done.
It's a good thing they're very, very small.
They are very small and pliable. I've learned that. But holy shit, it's a good thing it wasn't Gracie, because we'd have a hole in the hardwoods right now.
She'd still be falling.
She'd have made a crater the size of that fucking crater in Arizona.
Yes.
When the meteor hit. All right, everybody, that's enough about cats. We're going to talk about some wrestling here in a minute. But first, let's play a quick song so I can get my breath back, and then we'll get into this.
Gentlemen, Mr. Kevin!
Feeling better now than we're through.
I gotta see this dipshit on Impact now.
He failed to crawl to the corner and tag his partner.
What the fuck was he waiting for?
Don't know. Learn to work!
And now I see how you really are. You're no good, you're no good, you're no good.
Ken Kennedy.
You're no good.
How in a tag match can you fuck up the hot tag?
You're no good, you're no good, you're no good.
Mr. Kennedy.
It's no good.
Sean goes to clothesline him outside, and Kennedy doesn't go. So Sean's like, I'm going to get this fucker out of this ring. And he grabbed him, And you can hear Sean just going,
and I thought, boy.
Jesus Christ, Kennedy. You know, I don't like to brag, but when Kennedy fucked up a tag match with Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and we talked about it for God knows how long on this show, talking about how shitty he was, that was the beginning of the end for the guy. I was right, because when he nearly killed Randy Orton, dropping him on his bad neck and clavicle, and Randy Orton went to the back, and a bunch of dudes came forward to talk about how shitty Kennedy was, who would have been in that group but Shawn Michaels and Triple H? And John Cena. And Randy Orton. So
probably anyone else you ever wrestled.
Kennedy made a lot of friends during that company, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
What a dipshit.
God, I remember that match.
Horrible.
I don't think I've ever seen anyone so many times elicit in the middle of a match the guy he was working with throw a tantrum.
Yeah.
Orton did it. Michaels did it. I'm sure there's been more, but that should never happen.
I mean, listen, I can understand you, Vinny. Actually, you know what? I can't even understand you. How can anyone fuck up? It's one thing to fuck up like a singles match with Shawn Michaels, because it's a singles match, and things can happen. But in a fucking tag team match, a tag team match is so much easier to work than a singles match. Mm-hmm. Not just because there's three guys in there, aside from you, as opposed to just one, and there's other dudes to carry the load, but the psychology of a tag match, as we'll talk about when we talk about world-class championship wrestling, is such that you have to really fucking either try to fuck up or just be a goddamn horrible worker with no hope to fuck up a tag team match with Shawn Michaels and Triple H and Randy Orton. And Mr. Kennedy managed to do it, so there you go. All right. Start on Raw. Give us your quick Raw report.
Raw opened with a bad segment. Cena came out to the ring to start his new feud with CM Punk, and he did so with a lot of bad comedy. He was joking about diet soda and Michael Cole and Justin Bieber and Vicky Guerrero's weight. And Punk came out and basically said, "You're not funny. You are thoughtless and heartless. You just destroyed a man's career at TLC when you dropped chairs on Wade Barrett. Yeah, also, you're a liar because you said you'd be fired and instead you stayed here the whole time." Basically, Punk told the truth. And Cena denied it, called Punk out for a fight. Punk said no. He said he'd be back later. And then he wished everyone a happy new year. That was funny. We had...
What a friendly chap.
He wants everyone to be happy this new year. Ted DiBiase wrestled Santino, and then he lost when he missed a drop kick.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he fell... He leapt so high that when he fell from this height, he was debilitated and could not kick out.
Yeah.
And then we got comedy with Santino and Tamina doing double cobras on DiBiase and Maurice. Did they abandon the tag belts? Santino, I don't think he had his belt. There was no mention of Kozlov. He was nowhere to be seen.
If I knew the champions were, I could successfully answer your question.
I think they may have thrown them into the garbage can.
Pretty sure it is Kozlov and Santino, but I don't know what's going on.
We had another wretched backstage segment with Miz and Riley. When there was just those two, it was fine. And then Morrison showed up. And Morrison and Riley had the worst give and take. The interplay between themselves. They need to hire a guy, some out-of-work football player, and just have him follow John Morrison around. And when a microphone gets put near him, just tackle him out of the way. Because every time he's given a microphone, it sucks.
Yeah. I don't know who writes this shit for him.
His material does suck, but...
When Morrison is left to his own devices, which I think I've only seen one time in my entire life, he's actually quite good.
I think...
The Miz Morrison thing on SmackDown years back, I'll never forget it because he was so fucking good.
There was that one, and I was going to say, and it's a totally different way, he was great playing a laughable geek when he was an Eminem.
That's fair.
Which is a lifetime ago. But he can't be a laughable geek when he's a good guy.
Mm.
So, there you go. We had Riley versus Morrison.
Well, maybe if he turned heel with his heel beard,
you would think so.
Solve these problems.
You would think so. They did a match with Riley and Morrison where if Riley won, then Morrison forfeit his title shot. If Morrison won, then he got to name the time, place, and stipulations for his title match. So Miz interfered and got ejected, and Morrison won with his kick to the jaw, or the knee to the jaw right away, right after that. And then
I would just want to throw in here very quickly about Morrison and his beard. I love how I say when Morrison grows a beard that he must be turning heel. And because he doesn't turn heel, people scoff and they make fun of me for being an idiot. Listen, it's not my fault that things aren't the way that they used to be. Let's all stop for a second and think about the term babyface. Let's break that into two words. Baby face. What do all baby faces have in common?
No beards.
And by that I mean faces of babies. They don't have fucking beards. Because in the old days, the baby face was the clean-cut, handsome young fellow. And the heel was the bearded, hairy, ugly man. This was why people used to know who to boo and who to cheer. Nowadays, it's like, number one, everybody largely looks the same. And number two, ugly guys are supposed to be baby faces, and good-looking guys are supposed to be heels, and I don't even know what the fuck's going on anymore. But it's not my fault. Is it really my fault? I mean, if guys have a series of matches, and dudes keep running in, and I say, they must be setting up a cage match, and they end up setting up a chairs match instead. Okay, it's not my fault. I came to the proper conclusion. They just fucked it up. Just thought I'd get that out of there. In other words, I was right about John Morrison's heel turn, even though it hasn't happened.
Well, speaking of things that make no sense, Morrison won the match here, and then he walked over to Jerry Lawler, and he announced that he wanted a title match next week, and he wanted it Falls Count Anywhere. Why?
I don't know. So Jerry Lawler can get involved?
I guess.
Because you've got to start feuds with the stipulation
because
now?
Because you must start feuds with the stipulation match.
Is this somehow my fault that they are starting feuds with stipulations now? I'm waiting for somebody to explain how it's my fault.
Someone has to take the blame, Brian.
I see.
We need a
scapegoat. Well, I'm as good a person as any.
So Miz scolded Riley backstage, told him to do his job later when he wrestled Lawler. This was a segment where we got about five very short promos in a row, basically. It was impact-rific. We got that one. We got CM Punk telling the cameraman to do a good job when he called out Cena later. We got Daniel Bryan hanging out with the Bellas. Tyson Kidd and Jackson Andrews showed up, and Tyson vowed to win the U.S. title. I'm fine with that feud, by the way. Well, actually, I was at the time. And then
I was going to say, did you watch the show?
And then we had Randy Orton saying he wanted Miz to beat Morrison so he can beat Miz. Then he said he'd beat Sheamus tonight. And then we got Mark Henry versus Tyson Kidd. First of all, a note about Michael Cole. For the past several months, he's been burying the Hart Dynasty, calling them boring and saying they're not stars. Now he's a huge Tyson Kidd fan with no explanation why. And you say, well, Vinny, he's being a heel announcer. He's siding with the heels. Okay. I'm sure this happened with Bobby Heenan or Jesse Ventura, but they would always throw out just one line just to say, you know, I was wrong about this guy, or I like the way he's had a change of heart, or something. The point is, they would acknowledge the past. Michael Cole just pretends it never happened.
Of course.
And that's why it comes off as phony.
That's probably my fault, too, actually.
Now, that is not the biggest problem here, because, you see, Mark Henry pinned Tyson Kidd clean with the World's Strongest Slam. The shittiest heel turn of all time, I've decided, following the shittiest feud of all, or shittiest breakup of all time, of the Hart Dynasty. Then Jackson Andrews got in the ring, and I thought, okay, so they jobbed out Tyson to build it to a Mark Henry-Jackson Andrews feud, and then Mark Henry lead him out, too.
Mm-hmm.
Is Mark Henry going to get a main event shot soon? This is my theory, because there was zero mention of the Royal Rumble itself on the show. They're doing Miz and Morrison next week. They've given up on that. Miz is going to win there, and then he will face Mark Henry at the Royal Rumble.
Well, you're wrong about that.
All right. Well, it made as much sense as anything else I can figure.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Well, that's not going
to
happen.
How about fucking tall bodyguard fucked up and this is the end of him?
That's possible, too.
Yeah.
That's possible, too. So we had Miz.
Or they don't know what they're doing.
These are all, frankly, likely. They all make sense. Miz wrestled Lawler. Alex Riley is still carrying a briefcase and it's no longer the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Yeah.
He just got a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And no one ever questions why he's in there. So this is a strange deal, as it appeared to me that Michael Mizanin was calling spots for Jerry Lawler.
Something went wrong in this match, and I'm not sure what it was.
Once I realized that was happening, I couldn't even comprehend what was going on before.
Listen. It's not so much that he was calling spots, because he was the heel, and he should have been leading at least the heat portion of the match. But the weird thing was when there was a spot where suddenly they were both just staring at each other, and Miz had to say, "Punch me!"
Yeah.
That was weird.
And then shortly thereafter, when Morrissey came out for the distraction, and then Miz went for a spot where clearly Jerry Lawler was supposed to dodge a clothesline.
And he didn't.
He stayed there.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know if he was screwed up from the travel. It was not his night.
No.
But then...
Off night for the King.
It was an off night for the King. And then Miz ended up outside. And as Riley took the ref, Morrison laid Miz out with the knee to the face. And Miz was counted out to... I suppose this somehow builds to their Falls Count Anywhere match. So They booked the match and then shot the angle leading up to it.
Sure.
That's your fault, too. Punk met with Sheamus. He... showed him respect as the King of the Ring, so he won the title, earned the title. Then said, "What I'm going to do tonight to John Cena is for you, for the way he's insulted you, and good luck in your match tonight against Orton." And Sheamus said, "I don't need any luck, fella." He had Natalya joining Cole and Lawler on commentary for a women's tag match. She said that Melina's behavior was unacceptable.
I thought that was funny.
I couldn't. There was a point where she was doing scripted stuff and it was terrible. And then she started laughing at herself, and it was great. So as usual, scripted stuff sucks. They had a pretty fun tag. I thought Gail actually looked awesome this evening, and the fact that she is not getting the title shot is kind of funny.
Gail and Melina both look good.
Yeah, but Melina pinned her, so she's getting the title shot. That makes sense.
I'm not sold on Alicia's new red hair.
I did not have an opinion on it one way or the other. Hmm. So maybe next week I will change my mind, but that was that. Punk, okay, they had a segment where Punk told the trainers and EMTs to be ready for what he did to Cena, and then they did the bit where there's the uncomfortable long pause before they cut away, but in this case, it actually fit, because he gave them the speech about, be ready for what I do out there, and then they just looked at him for a while, and it was as if they were thinking, what a geek you are for telling us how to do our jobs, which would make sense.
I don't know if the idea is to make Punk look like a geek.
No, but that's what they would think if he told them that.
I see. I thought it failed because during the uncomfortable pause, there was one very loud man who screamed, "Boring!"
Well, that's hardly ever good. We had Daniel Bryan pinning Zack Ryder immediately. And then we got an email that was a distraction so Miz could beat up Jerry Lawler again. So that feud must continue. Maybe they'll wrestle the Royal Rumble. I don't know anymore. Cole was not bothering to defend Lawler for that bit. Matthews then said Cole was full of shit, basically. We had Sheamus and Orton in a match that started off very, very, very boring, and then Randy made his comeback and everyone got into it, and by the end it was actually really good, and the finish was also cool in that earlier in the match, Sheamus had hit a slingshot shoulder block, which is an impressive move for a big man like him, looked really great. So he tried it again later, and he slingshot himself right into an RKO. Awesome! Randy pinned
him. I enjoyed it.
That was fine, yes.
I enjoyed this battle.
Yep. So then we had the main event angle. It was supposed to be Punk calling out Cena, but Cena came down by himself first. He called Punk CM Sucks over and over and over again. Played Punk's music. He didn't come out. Cena said he would go find him when who should come out but the surviving members of Nexus, which is everyone except Wade. David Otunga for this bit was their spokesman. That is a fail. He basically offered Cena a truce. Cena said Otunga was full of shit. Told him to fuck off. Nexus went to bail, and then they turned around to get him. They laid him out exactly like they have done every single other time. Only when they were done, Punk came out. He laid Cena out with a go to sleep. He teased a chair shot of death, but then just sat down in the chair, put on a Nexus armband, and raised his fist to them. And they all raised their fists back, except Justin Gabriel. And they cut away, and when they cut back, Justin's fist was mysteriously up in the air. He forgot his spot. And his spot was to raise his fist.
Tough spot to forget when all the other men are doing the same thing.
Yes. So, not his best night either. So, Not the best show I ever saw, but hey, Punk and Cena is something new.
Well, the good news is that, well, the first part's not good news, but John Cena apparently blew out his knee tonight.
Oh, shit.
At the house show. So the good news is that at the end of Raw, they killed him. So if he ends up having to be out of action for a while, at least there's a storyline reason for it, and you could put a massive amount of heat on CM Punk.
Well, that about sucks.
Oh, I don't know how bad it is, but he fucked it and then told the fans he probably would not be around for a while. That's usually bad.
That's never a good sign.
So we'll find out probably tomorrow what the status of John Cena's knee is. All right, we're going to get into World Class Championship Wrestling, but first off, a song here from Brandon.
There she was, just walking down the street singing.
Chat, a shitty chat, pay-per-view main.
Snapping her fingers and shuffling her feet singing.
Chat, a shitty chat, pay-per-view main.
She looked good, she looked fine. She looked good, she looked fine. And I nearly lost my mind. Before I knew it, she was walking next to me singing.
Chat, a shitty chat, shitty pay-per-view.
In my hand, just as metal as can be a singer.
Shat, shitty. Whoa. That was a good one.
Win.
I like the ones that are extremely creative, which that one was.
And it also made us joke and then ended. Didn't drag it out.
Yeah.
That was an A-plus drop.
Got the hell out. All right, we watched World Class Championship Wrestling, which was an old promotion. And this was a fun program. It was January 13th, 1985, was the, what'd they call it?
They call Christmas... They said this was the Christmas show.
Star Wars something?
I think the deal was, this was their regular television show, but they were showing highlights of the Christmas Day show.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened here. So we got a short bit of Mike Von Erich and Billy Jack Haynes versus Gino Hernandez and Jake Roberts. They actually explained in the next match, not in this one, in the next match, they explained that Billy Jack had been wrestling in the company lately, and as a tribute to his father, was going back to his real name of Billy Haynes. And then a year later, he would be in WWF as Billy Jack Haynes. Hmm. That's who it was. So we only saw maybe 2 minutes of this. It appeared to be all four men brawling the whole time. The finish was Jake climbed the middle rope, then he jumped down, and then Mike Von Erich grabbed his head in the claw. Somehow they botched this. But he got the claw on. It was Texas, so everyone went crazy. And he pinned Jake with the claw. The real story about this was the gear. First of all, I always love seeing Jake in his pre-WWF days. Because he's always wearing sweatpants or pajama bottoms or a karate gi dyed a flashy color. It's always something strange. And then on the other end of the spectrum, Mike Von Erich was wrestling in super tight all-white trunks. You could clearly see his male anatomy. And at the end of the match where he won, he leapt high into the air into the arms of Billy Jack Haynes, who wrapped his arms around Mike's thighs. He patted his ass with one hand, and with the other hand, it basically stuck his thumb up Mike's ass.
Yeah.
They were very happy, I guess.
As I said when we watched this, was self-awareness invented in 1990?
I guess.
Actually, that's a bad year. 2001, was that when self-awareness in this country...
Mike Von Erich apparently did not know how ridiculous he looked in this outfit.
This was just absurd. I guess every 10 years when you look back, you realize that 10 years ago, people had no self-awareness. So I guess we still don't have it here. But yeah, the fucking white tighty-whities in the ring, you know what I mean?
Not a good look.
It was unflattering. Speaking of cocks, Jake Roberts looked like John Holmes.
Now, you told me during this you've been reading a book about porn.
Yeah, I asked a few... remember I asked several weeks back about some... I wanted a book about the porn industry, because it seemed to be a lot like wrestling. You know what I mean?
In some ways, yes.
A lot of weird, fucked up people. Yeah. In a lot of ways, actually.
And I have not read Jenna Jameson's book. But it was in the bookstore. I flipped open to one page, and she told a story about how she had a boyfriend who was also in the porn industry. They broke up, and so to get back at her, he booked himself. That's the word she used. He booked himself with all of her friends.
Hmm.
Yep.
Well, that's porn, everybody.
And that sounds like something a wrestler would do.
The Other Hollywood by Legs McNeil was recommended to me.
Legs.
Legs McNeil, yeah. Mm. And I bought it, and I am devouring it. It's a great book. But I'm on the chapter now about John Holmes, and I was not a porn connoisseur in the 70s, having just been birthed. So as I'm reading this book about all these old porn stars, I have to Google them to see what they look like. You know what I mean?
You Googled John Holmes?
Well, yeah. I didn't Google John Holmes' cock.
You don't have to.
Well, actually, when I Googled John Holmes, I was stunned to see no pictures of his cock. It almost got me curious. But anyway, so...
He had an enormous penis.
Well, that's the gimmick.
Yeah.
But the point is, I Googled him, and he's a skinny, goofy-looking dude with a porn stash.
He looked a lot like Jake Roberts, yes.
Yeah, he looked exactly like Jake Roberts. But then I had to see another guy's cock. This was just, this whole thing was just unacceptable.
There's a lot of cocks in porn.
And in world class, apparently.
And in world class. Because, as we will see as we go through the show, many, many wrestlers for this company wrestled in trunks that were too tight.
Well, it was actually all the Von Erichs, quite frankly.
And also Iceman Parsons.
Yeah, well.
Not to the same degree.
No.
But they were too small.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I don't know if we just never noticed this before, or if maybe it was something that was strictly this year or this show or what, but the World Class Championship Wrestling ring looked like the worst ring I've ever seen in my entire life.
It looked like a slab of granite with canvas stretched across it.
There was no give. Like, none. I mean, you these guys, I forget who it was. Somebody took a fucking backdrop.
It was Rip Oliver.
Rip Oliver took a backdrop on this ring, and he bounced. And he did not bounce because the ring bounced. Oh, no. He bounced the way a body would bounce if you dropped it off a four-story house and it landed on cement. That is how his body bounced. I could not even believe fucking people were taking bumps in this ring.
Remember when...
I remember Dave DiBiase and Mike Jones.
That's not what I was going to say.
Oh.
I was talking about Kane and fake Kane. When fake Kane took the choke slam on the Raw ramp or the Raw stage, and we described this as a life-shortening bump.
Yes.
I would take that before I would take a backdrop in this world-class ring.
I've never seen a ring this bad before. And Dave DiBiase's ring used to be reinforced with concrete. No, it wasn't concrete. Steel? Iron?
I don't know.
I don't know. But this was bad times.
Yes.
I would take a bump in an old CMLL ring before I took a fucking bump in this ring. This ring sucked.
So that was on great display here in this next match as Iceman Parsons wrestled Rip Oliver. Rip Oliver is the man who took the giant backdrop. He took dozens of hip tosses. He took a simple body slam where you saw his body bounce and the ring not react at all. His body took 100% of this impact and then reflected it, recoiling him back into the air.
I'm not even sure he bounced. I think that when he hit the ring, it was so hard that the earth moved downwards.
Perhaps.
And then moved back up.
Perhaps. Meanwhile, Iceman Parsons spent the entire time he would go on offense, he'd hit these moves, Oliver would bump, and Parsons would dance. Then, when Oliver was on offense, he would punch Iceman, and Iceman, rather than take a flat back bump, would fall to his knees or roll on his side down to his ass. The point here is that Iceman is smart. I have a newfound respect for the man. And then, if he finished, he missed a shoulder charge. Oliver immediately hit a shoulder breaker and pinned him. It was every star and three-quarter match you ever saw.
Then we had the Fantastics and the Midnight Express in a great match. God damn, this match was great. And I know that when you're young, the wrestling that you watch for a lot of people is like remembered as the best wrestling that there ever was. And I know that Ed's going to be very upset when I say this, but Bronco Lubitsch was the dirt worst referee in the history of refereeing. He was horrible. Like, he was immobile. I don't even know if he got to his knees half the time when he made counts. He, like, grabbed the ropes so that he wouldn't tip over and hit the mat and then use the ropes to help himself get back up. Holy Christ, he was awful. But other than that, this match was awesome. As noted earlier, you can't fuck up a tag match, especially if you're in there with the Midnight Express. I mean, you would have to be like, who was really bad on this show? Actually, really nobody.
The worst guy we saw here was probably Mike Von Erich.
If you were Bronco Lubitsch facing the Midnight Express, you'd be in a good match. It's how easy a tag match is with good heels on the other side of the ring. They had a fucking phenomenal match. And they got the heat on... who did they get the heat on?
Tommy Rogers.
Tommy Rogers, forever. And I mean, forever they got the heat on this guy. And the place is just going nuts. And finally, he does a double sunset flip. And then
that was so great.
Makes because a tag and ran wild.
Because you see, they went for a double backdrop, the Midnights did. And Rogers, he sunset flipped both of them. They both fell over. But then rather than try to hold them down, which would have been a ridiculous concept and he knew it, he let them go and he turned around and scrambled furiously to make the hot tag.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing more important in this man's life than tagging out.
Yes.
And the funny thing is, and coincidentally, I happened to watch a few Fantastics Midnights match last night for the tape-per-view. And Tommy and Rogers would always make the hot tag and then stay in the ring. Which is weird to me, but it worked for him. So, okay. So he made the hot tag. He stayed in the ring. Fulton ran wild for a bit. Then they did all four brawling. And then the Midnights whipped Jackie in for a double clothesline. He ducked. The Midnights hit the ropes. Rogers tripped one of them. And Fulton pinned the other one with the body press. And they won.
And the place went apeshit.
Yes.
The heat for this match was outstanding.
The other impression I had with this was... You always hear about, and it was true, how ridiculously over the Von Erich boys were with the young girls of Texas. You would think they would have enough sex appeal to satisfy all these young ladies. Apparently not.
No.
Apparently they wanted more, and they wanted the Fantastics.
Yeah, this match was... God damn, it was great. This would have been a great match on Raw in 2010.
Oh, Jesus, yes.
That's how good it was.
The only problem is...
In fact, it would have been the best match on Raw in weeks.
Also true. The only problem is I watched... Two Fantastics Midnights match yesterday, and one of them, quite frankly, blew this away.
I think you need.
I'll have to bring that one over.
You need to team up with somebody in Tulalip and be the Adequates.
Even that's giving you too much credit.
Yeah.
The just theirs.
The. I don't know.
The
I like
best they can do's.
The Adequates, I think, is the best. The barely Adequates.
The worst guys on the show.
It needs to be one word, you jackass, that's not fantastic.
You're
killing the joke with each passing idea here.
That's your opinion.
No, that's a fact. The Adequates. The Lacklusters.
That's better.
There we go.
And Lukewarm's Lacklusters.
God. And Buddy and I could come back as the new Fabulous Ones.
Sure.
The Fabulous Ones against the Lacklusters in 2011 in Tulalip. We'd sell out.
God, you almost made me want to do it.
Yeah. If Buddy came back to be my partner, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Oh, well, that's not going to happen.
Actually, you and Ryzik. That way I could feud with Ryzik again.
Sure.
The Lacklusters. Sure.
So.
You may continue.
Back here in World Class. We had a video package of the Kevin Von Erich, Chris Adams feud. Add Kevin to the list of men whose trunks were way too small. On top of that... Not only did he wrestle barefoot, but there was one bit in here where he was wearing these tiny little trunks and no boots and no knee pads.
Yeah.
This was the nudest wrestler I've ever seen.
Yeah, he was exposed. He was Kelly Kelly at 19, an exhibitionist.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Remember that gimmick?
I do.
Yeah.
That was pre-PG.
That was.
Mm-hmm. So then we had the match. It was Kevin Von Erich versus Chris Adams in a lumberjack match. The good thing about this match was...
This I gotta hear.
And this is only... This shows how far wrestling has fallen. When there's the lumberjack these days now, you know it's just going to be... They'll toss the guy out and... Either they'll toss him out in front of the heels and the heels will take care of their own guy. Or the lumberjacks themselves will start brawling and steal the spotlight. No. These lumberjacks were out there to do a job. When the wrestlers got thrown out, they immediately put them back in, and that was it. That was the only good thing about this match.
It was such that none of the lumberjacks looked like complete idiots.
Yes.
And nowadays, if you're a lumberjack, you are a dork. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Or they would do the bit now where they throw the guy out, and the lumberjacks go to get him, and he kicks all their ass.
Yeah.
That's another one they do these days. Now, no. There were just a bunch of big, faceless men out there who, when the wrestlers fell into them, they would put them back into the ring. And as I said, that was the last good thing. Kevin Von Erich, I don't want to accuse anyone of anything, but he...
Because you see, the idea is, you are chosen to be a lumberjack because you're an ass kicker.
Yeah.
Like, the company wants to make sure that these two fucking guys get in the ring and nobody can get away. So they find the biggest, roughest, toughest ass kickers they can find and surround the ring with them.
Correct.
This puts over the lumberjacks. Nowadays, it's like, okay, we're going to take the 10 biggest dorks on the brand, and we're going to have 5 dorks on one side, 5 dorks on the other side, and anybody who's even a moderate star that's put in there with these dorks ends up looking like a complete dork. Why is this stuff so hard to figure out nowadays?
I don't know.
Jesus.
I don't know. So, I don't want to accuse anyone of anything, but in this particular match, in this particular show, Kevin Von Erich appeared to be in the ring, high on everything.
He had a bad night.
He had a horrible night.
He fucked up. Well, actually, I can believe this because he did an airplane spin.
I guess that's what it was.
Which involves spinning. Bad times. He collapsed. I thought he tore out both knees.
Quite horrible. And then here's the finish. Chris Adams hit a pile driver, which, by the way, in this ring, was a terrifying move.
Well, that proved that Von Erich was fucked up, because I would have had to been on a lot of shit to take a pile driver in that ring.
Took this move. So Adams then went up to the top rope. Von Erich went to cut him off and to give him the press them off the top rope, as we've seen, for example, Ric Flair do a million times. Then they just both fell down. Adams' knee looked like it fell right into Kevin's face. And then they both collapsed on the mat. Then Kevin pinned him.
I wonder if Kevin called his own audible, because I think he was supposed to be thrown off like Ric Flair, but Kevin just dropped him, and so I presume on the way down he just decided, I better fucking neck myself. Anyway,
Adams, as he was going down, did neck himself on the top rope, so at least there was that. But it sure as hell looked like Adams fell on top of Kevin, and then Kevin pinned him.
Yeah.
This was a piece of shit match.
It was really bad.
Now, that being said, as far as this live crowd knew, Kevin Von Erich had won, and that made them happy.
Yeah.
They did not disappoint their fans.
They did not disappoint their fans. They delivered excitement, if you want to call it that. It was exciting,
get
me wrong.
It was not boring.
No. They delivered. If you paid your money, you got your money's worth. That's for sure. So anyway, I enjoyed this program. I had a good time watching it.
It's very hard to find a bad world-class show.
Check it out on WWE Classics, January 13, 1985. It's up there right now. We're going to play one more song, and then we've got some shout-outs, and Vinny's got a present I guess we have to open.
Apparently, I'm guessing this got here late.
One present left over. And I would also like to spend a very... I want to send a very special shout-out to the son of Mr. Hialeah. Mr. Hialeah Jr.
He ho del Hialeah.
Sir Hialeah Jr., I like to call him. Anyway, he sent me a kitten shirt.
Aww.
Yeah. And I want him to know that I wore it down to Cannon Beach. I wore it all over the beach, and I loved it so much, I wore it 2 days in a row. And it was, in fact, the best gift that I got from anybody all Christmas long.
Aww.
So it really is awesome. I'll take a picture in it next time I wear it, but it's fabulous. So, Hijo del Señor Hialeah, thank you very much. All right, Vinny, open that present. Who's it from?
It says Royal Mail.
Let me play the song here while you open it up.
How do you do that? I don't see...
This guy apparently did a couple of poor songs, and he's trying to redeem himself with a third try.
It's from Darren in the UK.
Here we go.
What you gonna do with all that...
Ken and Scott!
All that junk inside your...
That's your last...
Come on, get
oh, Mike, I hate to end your show, but wasn't levelated. Blowing out people's ears with satchel ass, so I'll give you another shot next time, but run that thing through the levelator first.
Why do people take a comedy song and then try to make it funny?
I don't know. Don't ask me. Ask Mike.
All right, this is from Darren in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sticker on here with what appears to be a crucifix.
Oh, that's always good.
It says open, and that is crossed out with marker, and there's many other words crossed out with marker as well.
What?
That's... Dude,
all right.
That's what's on here. Right, I'm opening the package now. There is
hopefully this
a card and a package.
Nothing bad.
to Brian and Vinny, World's Tackiest Christmas Card Inside. Oh gosh, I might play another song.
I do like that this guy, by sending it late, what's his name?
Darren in the UK.
Darren in the UK. First off, Darren, I want to say thank you.
Maybe it's William Regal.
Darren, it could be. I hadn't thought of that. Darren in the UK was smart enough to send his present a little bit late, so that way we open it sober and we'll remember it. Unlike every fucking present that I got that I actually opened on the show. I don't remember a single one.
Of the things I have read on the board, I have no memory of chocolate liqueur. I have no memory of sunglasses. I have no memory of calling Granny. I have no memory of calling Todd. I have no memory of calling Rodney. I'm sure there's more, but he sends a little card. There's a snowman with a cute puppy dog face. It says, thanks for entertaining me this year. To Brian and Vinny from Darren, Merry Christmas. He is Dazza on the board.
Oh, Dazza.
And then he gives
you guys have to give me your board name, because I don't recognize all of these real names.
He gives his
email, but I recognize Dazza.
He gives his email address, which I will not read here. And then here's a package. It says, to Brian and Vinny, enjoy, from Darren. I believe this says Wadsworth. And again, that is Dazza on the board. He used a lot of tape. Oh, he sends a fine collection of English candy, it appears.
Really?
We have, what is this here? We have Thornton's Alpini Continental, the Art of the Chocolatier. I'm looking for a flavor variety. This is chocolate.
I always love chocolate.
Spiced tangerine.
Not a fan of tangerines.
Spiced tangerine mousse and white chocolate. Raspberry Burst. Turkish Delight. Wow, there's a lot of things. Another Raspberry Burst. Another tangerine. Almond Marzipan.
Mm-hmm.
Black Forest Gâteau. That will be yummy. We have another one of those.
Gâteau, you say.
I'm sure. I may have pronounced that wrong.
You don't say.
The Viennese Truffle.
Whoa, let me see that one.
And that's the last one. That's the last one.
Toss that bugger over here.
Here it comes.
Oh, jeez.
You got it. Thank you, Darren in the UK, for sending us 10 candy bars.
Hmm.
All right, girlfriend, read the tangerines.
Now, I do want to eat this.
Curious about the Turkish Delight.
However,
I'm saving mine until later.
A special blend of white and milk chocolate, a layered center of feather light chocolate mousse and truffle, finished with a sprinkle of sugar. Now, if that sounds good to you, I just want to read a couple of these ingredients, such as cocoa mass. What does that mean?
A mass of cocoa.
Invertase. I don't know if that's good. And an acid of some sort.
An acid?
Still going to eat it right now, actually. Everyone loves when we eat on the air. You want half of this?
Sure.
Oh, shit.
This one here, the first one that's trying to find a flavor, on the back it says,
it just busted apart in my hands.
Delicious milk chocolate.
That was not
with
a John Holmes joke. Grab this.
Hang on.
Grab this, I can't think of a good one.
Penis-shaped object to put in my mouth.
That's very good. I won't lie, that's good. I'm not supposed to eat into the mic, so let me play another song.
Mmm.
We'll play another song while we eat this food.
Wow. Shaq a shitty...
Gunner and Murphy.
Shaq a shitty Gunner and Murphy.
I don't know what the I don't know what that cocoa mass was, or whatever it was called.
But you want more?
But it was fucking good.
The other one I was trying to read in the first place. Delicious milk chocolate with a nutty praline center, made with ground hazelnuts and sugar roasted almonds, finished with a dusting of icing sugar. Darren in the UK is my new favorite board member.
He's a winner.
We'll have to divvy the rest of these up later.
He's a winner. I would also like to send a special shout out to Artie Reynolds, my co-author on Death of WCW, available right now at Amazon.com. He, basically the other day, I came home and there was a styrofoam cooler outside my front door. And I was like, Whitney, why is this cooler out here? And she said, what cooler? And I was like, what? And I brought it into the house, and this was what this gift had been mailed in. A styrofoam cooler. And I opened it up, and there were two fillets. steak.
He sent you meat.
He sent me meat. It's in the freezer right now, and it will be eaten very soon, and I can't wait.
So isn't he a Midwesterner, too?
He can be from wherever he wants to be after sending me steak.
He knows his cattle.
He knows his stuff. All right, a couple of shout-outs here, and then we'll wrap it up. This is from Joe. Of course, you get a free shout-out when you sign up. Head to F4WOnline.com, sign up. We do 15 to 20 shows a week. If you love this show, you only get one a week. You know the gig. Go to WrestlingObserver.com, see what you can't get, and then sign up and get it all. And by the way, not just 15 to 20 shows per week, but if you sign up for the $10.99, you get full access to our archives, which means every show we have ever done is available for you if you sign up. If you sign up right now, in 1 minute, you can go back and listen to any show from the last almost 6 years now. Anyone you want to. And that includes every single Christmas show. So if you weren't a member when we did the Christmas show, it doesn't matter. You can sign up and then go back and download all five Christmas shows and decide which one you like best. Christmas show was 3 hours, by the way, of drunkenness.
Pure bullshit.
Vinny and I drank absinthe and rum and a number of other...
whiskey, cognac, and something called Black Death.
On an empty stomach. Got totally fucked up. And then did a show for 3 hours. So if that sounds like fun, $10.99 gets you full access to all of the shows, including today's show with Dutch Mantel, which was awesome, and the Christmas show, and everything else you want as well. Brian, longtime subscriber here, just wanted to give a shout-out, express my thanks to Tony, Admin Tony, who helped me with a problem I was having giving a gift subscription. Even though I myself was the cause of the problem, he fixed the situation promptly, contacted me to let me know it was taken care of. I appreciate the customer service, the quality of the product you all work so hard to produce. That is from Joe. So, Joe, happy holidays to you as well. Thank you for ordering a gift subscription for somebody. Really appreciate that. And glad everything worked out for you as well. All right. This is from Daniel. Dear Brian and Viscera. That was a good one.
Because you call me fat?
Yeah. I came home to Boston for semester break. But where was I, you ask? Motherfucking Israel.
Holy shit.
Yes, you have a subscriber in Israel. Anyway, I went from 75-degree weather and beaches to 7 degrees and blizzard. So I echo your hearty fuck the snow. I know this sounds really fucking sad, but the Brian and Vinny show helped change my life. My junior year of high school, I was obsessed with wrestling to the detriment of everything. It took Brian yelling at me to realize wrestling isn't everything. So I decided to take a break from the computer and go and explore the world. The BV show helped me take risks, and whenever I had an amount of doubt, I just thought of Vinny and thought, Vinny doesn't go and take life by the balls, and he's fat.
I was trying to figure out how he would go from thanking us, me specifically, for going out and doing whatever it is he's doing.
He says, sorry, it's just so much fun to make fun of you, Vince. 3 years on the site, and I will subscribe until the aliens come. Loose cannon kid. He says, sorry about the length and the rambling, but he's fucked up on NyQuil. Yay!
NyQuil is great.
Vinny, what are you doing over there?
Playing with a Turkish delight.
Okay, stop for a second. Jesus.
Is that in the mic?
Yes.
I apologize.
All right, let's play one last song here. That was the only other shout-out, everybody. So don't forget, sign up and send in a shout-out. We'll read it on the next free show. So, as noted, I'm going to play one last song here. I'm going to find a good one. I tried to type in song, but typed in dong, and you want to know what
John
came
Holmes
up.
On the mind.
Yeah, it's bad when that happens, let me tell you. I know what one I'll play. It's the someone actually managed to take a terrible song and make it good. And, of course, now I've lost it, but it's here somewhere. Where was it? Hold on. I know what to search for. I didn't think it was possible to make this song acceptable, but this person, Troy, did it, so here you go. Her special area hurt.
Lady parts.
Her lady lumps. God, that was a fucking horrible song. Remember that fucking song?
It is a very terrible song. Mm-hmm.
There's no... That song could not be made funny, even in parody form.
What you gonna do with all that junk? All that junk inside your trunk?
I'ma get you drunk. Get you love drunk off my...
Vagina.
My... Lady parts.
My... Special area.
My hump. My hump. My lovely...
Lady lumps.
Check it out.
That was pretty good. He did make it funny with the parody.
That sure is a horrible song, though.
That is a god-awful song. When they do the worst song of the 21st century, that one's going to win. Just for those of you, hopefully I'm not dead, plan to live to be 125, which actually would be right around the time they make that list, by the way. But I will be redeemed someday when some kid is listening to this show to finish up his thesis on wrestling in the 20th century, and he goes, holy shit, Brian was right. My Humps was, in fact, the worst song of the 21st century. Right here, kids. Tomorrow, Todd Martin's going to be back on the show. Ariel Elwani's going to be on the show. Dave's going to be on the show. It's going to be a great day. So sign up and don't miss out, kids. And we'll talk to you again after a while.
Adios.